uncensored, no holds barred talk. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is the Global Reality Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another live edition of the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network. I'm your host, Josh Reeves. Thank you for being with us here tonight for another Moonbat edition of the broadcast. And it's Wednesday, now Thursday, going into Thursday, February, well, I guess it's now the 10th. 9th going into the 10th. Yeah, now the 10th. And we are here live with you tonight. We've got some news and information and various topics to discuss and cover with you here on the show tonight. So we're glad you could join us. And we will always be discussing your emails as well. I've got a few I've got to get into here tonight. And so I'll do that straight out of the gates tonight. But if you have something that you would like to have me discuss or get my take on or have me talk about, you can. Give me a shout at globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. So give me a shout over there, and I will do my best to discuss whatever questions or just things you want to get my opinion on. Sometimes when we get new listeners, people don't know where I stand on certain topics because I don't, you know, it's boring radio to go through everything, you know, where you stand on every topic and issue every single show. It gets old. So there are some questions and some stuff that people have asked me about that I'm going to discuss tonight. And some of you have heard me talk about some of these topics before, and that's okay. And then others haven't. So we'll get into some of that, but that's a good thing. So globalrealityshow@gmail.com. It's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's my email address there. And the website where this broadcast originates from is, of course, theglobalreality.com. It's www.theglobalreality.com. That's my web address. And we also have the chat room there for your pleasure. If you'd like to interact with other people listening to the show, you can go in there and talk to those people as well. So go in there and say hi in the chat room and have a conversation, hopefully related to some of the things we're going to be talking about here on the broadcast tonight. And so we'll be jumping into some of those. There wasn't a lot of material today, so I've been sort of struggling to see whether I was going to do a show or not, and had gotten some of these questions in tonight, and it gave me enough material here where I could talk about some things with you tonight. So we're going to get into it. Glad you could join us. All right. So here's the first one. This is an email I got tonight. And I am going to basically read this and answer these questions. He says, "Hello, Mr. Reeves. My name, I'm not going to say his name. Been with you about 4 months or so. Found you through a comment that Alex Celtic Rebel had made. I was also one of those Alex Jones followers you speak of. Even before I started listening to your show, I was souring on him. Exactly like you said in your recent show, something wasn't right. It is crazy. I'm 35 and living in a small town family life now, and I've been researching a variety of fringe topics for about 10 years, but I've always been the type to ask questions and think about things. My mom always says I think too much." Yeah, they always tell you that. That's what they always tell you. You know, if you're certain, I'm the same way. They always told me that when I was younger, you know, oh, you think too much. No, you're not thinking enough. And the fact that I am thinking makes it appear to you that I think too much. See, it's the other way around. So fucked up that a lot of us were raised that way, you know? But hell, our parents, people who raised us didn't know any better either. He says, funny how that is a bad thing in the U.S. Yeah, exactly. What is crazy is how you must constantly question the validity of the info and the source in regards to this type of interest. I know. You do, because people take things that are real and then, you know, skew it a certain way or don't give you the context and really show you why that piece of information is important. You know, people, that was a big one for me. The Bohemian Grove was a big one like that for me, because people, you know, were clamoring and still are to talk about the Bohemian Grove. But very rarely when people talk about the Bohemian Grove or the Illuminati in general either, do they ever quite really give you the importance of why we should be talking about it? For instance, you know, they always tell you, okay, the Bohemian Grove, you know, you've got these leaders and, you know, people of business, and they meet and they go in and they worship this owl and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. And it's Moloch and all that stuff is patently false. And as I show in volume one of The Secret Rite, you know, these things that were left out by people like Alex Jones and others that covered the Bohemian Grove are striking, and especially in light of the fact of the connections that we have discussed many times here on the show to the Jesuit order and the rest of it. I was shocked to find out, as I covered in The Secret Rite volume one, that they have a statue inside of the Bohemian Grove that depicts St. John of Nepomuk. And St. John of Nepomuk is a Jesuit martyr. He's the patron saint of the Bohemian Grove. And now, why did Mr. Jones feel the need to leave that out? That's very telling. Also, the fact that the owl is not Moloch, but Minerva, relating again to the Roman Empire. So the two distinct issues here with Mr. Jones just happened to connect to the other people that people, we question about him, his connection to the Jesuits, to the John Birch Society and the Sheens, and just, you know, John McManus for Robert Bob McManus from the John Birch Society, on and on. So, you know, that you're exactly right, sir. You know, you have to constantly question the validity of it, because it's become quite clear to me through my own research that the people who have been the figureheads of the quote-unquote truth and conspiracy movement have for a very, very long time not been telling us the whole truth, even though they claim to be doing it. And they try to wiggle out by saying, oh, well, you know, this, that, and the other. That's, you know, that's why you got to do your own research. And I tell people to do their own research too, but the thing about it is, when you do your own research and go back to these guys and say, okay, Mr. You know, figurehead truth movement man, I did what you told me to do. I went and did my own homework, because this is exactly what I did. This is exactly what got me to where I am now. You know, doing my own research and doing my own homework is what led me to the CMP and led me to this crazy fucking wild ride I've been on for almost 4 years now. And then when you go to Mr. Figurehead Truth Movement Man, you say, here's my findings. Look what I found. They say, no, that's, you know, no, you don't, no, don't look at that, because, you know, of course, it connects back to them. See how this works? So believe me, I'm with you there, man. That's an everyday struggle for me and many others. Continuing on with this email here, he says, I started out with Ike, then Jones, then Bill Cooper. Can't say I fully trust or believe any of them anymore. I'm with you there. Believe me. I do have a good feeling about you. A reptilian Illuminati likely hates the drive-by truckers. Yeah, I would say that, Illuminati's not getting down to Cooley and the gang. No, I don't think so for a second, but that's pretty cool. So anyway, I'm a huge music geek and I have some common interests. Lastly, what are your thoughts on Project Bluebeam? Please cover more of Mr. Browning's angle regarding particulate matter in the air. Mr. Browning's got a prediction. Yeah, from the New Madrid song by Uncle Tupelo. I love Uncle Tupelo. Played them the other night. As I believe you are the first to cover that. And is this Celtic Rebel guy on the up and up? So let's go back here. Project Blue Beam. And is this Celtic Rebel guy on the up and up? And Mr. Brown, well, I'll get into more of Mr. Browning stuff and I'll try to find some of his works and books and see if I can buy some of those or something and read them here on the air as well. Yeah, Ivan Browning. Yeah, I'll definitely get into more of his stuff on the air for you. No problem. Project Blue Beam, that's a long one. So give me a minute on that. I'll get to a minute. Celtic Rebel guy, is he on the up and up? Well, you know, that's really up for you to decide. You know, judging by what he puts out. I mean, do you think it is? I can, you know, just like I've talked about many times when people ask my opinion about this person or that. And what I always tell you is I can only tell you my honest opinion on someone based on something that I've experienced with them. You know what I mean? If I haven't experienced something one-on-one with something with somebody, you know, my feelings about that person might be, you know, are generally going to be based on something that is a disagreement. But with people I have had interaction with, you know, I do have a definite feeling about that in those type of people. And, I mean, you want me to be honest about it. Celtic Rebel basically built his, entire platform off of, my show and off of my chat room. Honest to God, he used to call into my show. He started calling to my show back in like 2008, back when I was on TrueNet Radio, and you know, brought up some good points. Always had some good stuff to talk about, and I liked when he called in, and he always seemed to be on point about a lot of things. And I thought, you know, he had a good voice, and I said, yeah, you know, we should give this guy a show at some point. And I think I was the first person that said, yeah, you know, we should probably try to give this guy a show at some point. And at that point he hadn't gotten into any of all the anal stuff and all the poo references and it's a kosher conspiracy to make us all gay. I mean, he hadn't gotten all that stuff yet. And I started noticing that right after he got a show, he started coming in my chat room. He used to be real cool, and he came in my chat room one day and he just started being a dick to me, trying to undermine me and just, you know, just nasty things saying to me. And I've seen it before. It's happened, you know, 6 or 7 times since I've been on air. You get these people that come along and they act like they're all cool with me at first. And then they use my audience and my listenership to build their own platform. And then once they do that, then they start turning on me. You know, then it's okay. Well, now we have to turn on, I don't know, now they start trying to come after me. And so it's happened so many times. It's real sad to see it. But it does see it. So, you know, I have to say that I did experience that. That's the truth. I don't know, man. I'll leave it up to you to decide what you think about the guy. I will say this. I did think this was odd. I remember when he first started calling into my show, and this was before he was on radio or anything else, and he had added me. This was back in like 2008. He had added me back when MySpace was the big thing, and that's what I was using predominantly to promote the show. And he had a thing on his MySpace for the longest time. He's since removed it, and it said retired. The guy's in his 30s. It says he was retired, and it said that his former employer, one of his former employers, was De Beers. And I was like, well, De Beers? My God, that's fucking blood diamond sales right there, baby. That's fucking, you know, I always thought that was weird. And then after he got in radio and stuff, he removed all that from his website. I don't know. Personally, I think the guy's, you want my honest opinion, I think the guy's a joker. I don't think he takes research or any of this stuff seriously. I think he's just a clown. I think he just does what he does to try and just a laugh at everybody else. So that he can actually get, you know, some of these conspiracy idiots to actually take what he talks about seriously. I think it's a big, sick joke being perpetrated by somebody. How's that? See, that's why they don't like me having my own network, because I say what I get to say what I want to say. You see, it doesn't happen when you're owned by, when your show is owned by some other entity other than yourself. Anyway, you know, that's my opinion on the guy. I don't take anything he does seriously, because I don't think he's a real researcher. I think he's just a guy that's there as doing this as a big joke to laugh at all of us and all the idiots who take what he does seriously. That's me. But you again, you form your own opinion. Don't form your opinion based on what I said, please. You asked me for my opinion. I gave you my honest opinion. Don't fault me for that. I don't think even Celtic Rebel would fault me for that. You know, hey, I'm not telling you not to listen to his show or get into his work. Check him out. CelticRebel.wordpress or something like that. His website, just go Google and find him. Yeah, go check out his stuff. I'm not telling you not to, but I'm not going to sit here and not tell you what I think or tell you how I feel, because that's how I feel about it. And I wouldn't take anything the guy said or did seriously. I mean, honestly. But, it is sad, though, but I've seen that happen a couple of times. These guys, you know, they come in and they buddy-buddy up to you, and then they, they start acting like they're a subsidiary of what you're doing, and then they rope people and listeners into what they're doing, and then, come around and turn around and try to attack you. It's just, it's sick to see the people do this stuff. I didn't build my platform off of anybody, okay? I mean, people have tried to ride my coattails and try to, people for a long time. If you want it, you got to work your ass off for it. And that's the one thing that nobody can ever say about me. I work my ass off for this. I put everything into it. So, but thank you so much to our email there. I hope I answered your question. Project Bluebeam. All right. how long have we been going here? 16 minutes? That's not too bad. Shouldn't take me long. Project Bluebeam is something that I have discussed quite a bit through the years. There are a lot of archives out there existing around in the floating around in the ether of cyberspace. You can go to archive.org. Has a bunch of different shows that some of our listeners have cut and edited and took the commercials out of and posted up there. So go to archive.org, search Josh Reeves, Global Reality, something like that should bring it to you. And you can go through there and find a lot of the shows from a lot of different topics I've talked about going back, I think, as far back as 2008. I've got a bunch of, recently found a bunch of 2007 shows. We should probably put some of those up too. So you can hear me still talking like I'm in the fucking Patriot paradigm. It's hilarious shit. Gotta tell you. You ever want to get a good laugh, listen to one of those old shows of mine from 2007, my God. Project Bluebeam I've talked about a bit, quite a bit. And it's one of those topics that what I believe about it has changed dramatically over the past year or so. I used to think that it was absolutely 100%. I do think it is still plausible. But I think that Bluebeam is a lie for a much bigger lie. That's personally what I believe. But the thing about Bluebeam that is interesting to me is that I think that they're telling us that they're going to stage an alien invasion so that we will get behind and support the shooting down of extraterrestrial craft. They'll tell us it's a threat. We get behind shooting it down. And, there's a lot of indicators that there are extraterrestrial entities trying to make themselves apparent to us and to keep us from destroying each other with war and basically bring their supremacy down, much like what I talked about yesterday about how they won't allow anything to interfere or get in the way of their master work, their great work. So, some of the Project Bluebeam stuff, I know that the technology exists to do that. I just, at this point, I don't know if they need that card or not, but they still may do it. I don't believe that we should, because everybody, and this has been on, conspiracy theory with Jesse Ventura now, everybody is pushing the stage alien thing, and they're misquoting Von Braun all over the place. Saying that Von Braun said they're going to stage an alien invasion. That's not what he said. He said they're going to tell us that hostile aliens want to wage war against us and that we have to weaponize space to protect ourselves against them and that all of that will be a lie. That was what he said. That they were going to trick us into acquiescing into worldwide the weaponization of space, because as it stands right now with the treaties and whatnot, they can't get these weapons up there. But if it's if there's a threat to everyone on the planet and they can get these weapons up there, well, then after their alleged alien war is over, they've still got those weapons up there pointed wherever they want to on Earth, and then they get to lock down Earth after that. And yes, then they might roll out this, you know, beaming messianic deities with, you know, voice-to-skull technology. I mean, all that technology to do what is talked about in Project Bluebeam is valid. I just feel like it was planted. You understand? I don't feel anymore that they want to fake this stuff to convince us of this, that, and the other. I believe it's the other way around. I believe that they're creating this conspiracy theory so that we will think something that is real is fake or black op technology. There are people in the Patriot movement, Truth movement, that believe that all UFOs are the result of government technology and nothing else. I mean, they completely discount any realm of possibility of these things coming through portals from inside the Earth or anywhere else. It completely altogether. All UFOs are black op technology, and that's it. I can't believe anyone would have that narrow of a mindset. But that's exactly what the mindset they want you to have. Because they want the conspiracy theorists. Here's the thing. The general public, they tell the general public that these are UFOs and these are extraterrestrials and they're a threat and we need to weaponize space to shoot them down. Okay? There you go. Then you've got the alternative media. You've got people like myself and other radio hosts and websites and everything. And then the meme that goes around the conspiracy movement is, well, this is, you know, yeah, they're telling the public we got to weaponize this for space and Von Braun was right. And yeah, but they're all just holograms. So, you know, fuck them. They're just putting on this show. They're going to weaponize space, shoot down these phony UFOs, and, you know, we'll go on about our business, blah, blah, blah. But see, what just happened there? Did you notice what just happened there? You just got all of the conspiracy research people to just acquiesce to apathy. Oh, well, they're just fake. They're just holograms. They're just putting on a show for the stupid public, and the stupid public believes we're getting invaded by aliens, and, you know, oh, they're dumbasses. Just let them shoot down those phony holograms. Wait a minute. What if they're not phony holograms? What if that meme has been put out there so that we worldwide acquiesce, all of us, even the people in the conspiracy research community, acquiesce to shooting down extraterrestrials? You see, with that lie, they get the mainstream public and they get the alternative research community. You see? Because you got the general public thinking they're real aliens and they're a threat. Okay, boom, kill them. Then you got the conspiracy movement thinking they're all holograms and fake shit anyway. Boom, shoot it down. Who cares? It doesn't matter. It's fake anyway, right? It's all TV fakery. You see what I'm saying? I believe there's a threat to their power from entities outside of our planet and beyond our normal comprehension. And they're challenging the supremacy of the elite, and they're feeding us these lies about phony alien invasion scenarios. When again, you know, even I made the mistake for years misquoting Von Braun. I had to catch myself in my research when I went back and actually pulled all the Carol Rosen interviews I could find, all the quotes from Von Braun I could find, and never once did he say they were going to fake an alien invasion. He said that the scenario was going to be fake. By fake, he meant they were going to tell us that the extraterrestrials were a threat when they weren't, so we would weaponize space to destroy these extraterrestrials that essentially wanted to keep us from destroying ourselves. So that's my thoughts on Project Bluebeam. I hope that enlightened you to my thoughts on that. We're going to take a break and come back, and we'd love to hear from you as well. GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. That's GlobalRealityShow@gmail.com. Live for you here tonight, Moonbat Show, 1 a.m. Central Standard Time. This is the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network with me, your host, Josh Reeves. Stay with us. Stay with us as soon as I get my song pulled up. Where'd it go? There it is. right back here with you on the Global Reality right here on the Global Reality Radio Network Moonbat edition of the show for you here tonight. Glad you could join us. And we'd love to hear from you through email, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. That's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. We have the chip-in banner there for the support of the network to help us pay bills and survive, and that's there at theglobalreality.com. Please donate and support if you can. It keeps us commercial-free and uncensored, and lets us get our message out unfiltered. So please support us there. Donate button is there for the films or larger amounts if you'd like to help us to buy more equipment for filmmaking and radio and all the rest of this stuff. You can use the donate button there for that. I wanted to go to another email that I got, and this was in regards to some of the things that we had discussed that went on last time I was on with Lee Rogers. And we talked a bit about this last night, and interestingly enough, we had a listener who apparently has some information that, supports this idea that, you know, the what I put forward through my research into the CMP and all these other various interlocking groups, that there is a large portion of the alleged patriot movement, truth movement, that is based and very much is sort of what you would call, crypto white supremacists or crypto white nationalists. They're in secret and in hiding. And there's a very big amount of these. I'm finding more and more involved in the truth movement, and patriot movement. These just happen to be the ones that always blame the Jews and always never want to talk about the Jesuits or the CMP. And they get real nervous when you bring it up and get real butthurt. But so anyway, let's read this email here. It says, "Dear Mr. Reeves, I heard of your show. I heard your show of Moonbat." The show of Moonbat. I like that. From last week, I heard that you say that a radio host had admitted something to Lee. And while we were on, there was messages being sent to Lee. That's why, like I said last night, well, I can't talk about it. But because they weren't sent to me, they were sent to Lee. So, you know, it's not something I can really talk about or tell you who it was or anything like that. Because it's not my business to talk about it because it wasn't addressed to me. It was only made to my attention by Lee. So, and if that I'm correct, you said that based on some of the admissions, you were able to infer that people called the CMP are trying to bring about that which is written in William Pierce's The Turner Diaries and probably Hunter as well. I do not know how you inferred this, but I have been reading extensively on the various white nationalist groups and would like to share some information with you if you wish. You come across these white nationalists and these neo-Nazis and KKK types extensively in the Council for National Policy Research. I go back to Estes Park, Colorado in 1990, where you had, Larry Pratt there with Howard Phillips at a white supremacist meeting in Estes Park, Colorado, handing out a manual that became the blueprint for the modern day militia movement in the United States. And right around that same time, Larry Pratt had also written in his book, Armed People Victorious, that we need a Contra-style militia group in the United States of America. And of course, we talk about the connections of the Contra and the CMP and the Patriot Movement in Volume 1 of The Secret Right. So, whereas you read a lot of stuff on conspiracy, I instead chose to concentrate on the white nationalist crowd for several reasons. In 2008, I started to follow the thread called Jew World Order and ended up in the gas chamber, so to speak, and I had been listening to Hal Turner and was then introduced to James Wickstrom. At this point, I started to actually pay attention to Tex Mars talk about Zionists, and soon after, I discovered RBN. Yeah, I used to be on RBN back in 2008, actually. Here we had Mark Glenn, Mike Piper, Rick Adams, and others. Then I was introduced to the Political Cesspool radio show, and then it was Reason Radio Network. I think you see where this is going. The reason I decided to read about these guys is because I was curious why there were so many of these guys involved in the Patriot movement. Indeed, that's a question I've been starting to figure out more of the answer to as of late myself. It's also easier to prove to people that these are bad guys. With conspiracy topics, it's a little more difficult and is harder to show them why it matters. With white nationalism, they know what that leads to, like Hitler and etc. Anyway, not to get too off track now, but I would like to suggest to you that you look at something called Imperium. I-M-P-E-R-I-U-M, because it tells you what these people want. The latest is Caius Marcus Aedius, and it is called Imperium Manifesto. Caius used to work at the UN, and there is another book of Imperium coming out that is written by another UN person, allegedly. Plus, besides this, there are a lot of nationalist parties in Europe. I hope this helps you, and I would like to hear back as to what you think of it, your take on it. And so good day to you, Mr. Reeves. Well, thank you. Very interesting stuff there, because as this person said, you know, they're not coming at this from a conspiratorial viewpoint. This person's research is just focused on that area of white nationalism stuff. And yes, I mean, indeed, I mean, I've been shocked and appalled to see how much of this stuff is embedded in it. And then when I see the connections into the Council for National Policy, and while those same entities won't talk about that group, see, then the light bulbs go off. So what's interesting is, so with that said, and that, I don't think this person is very, they seem like they just recently found my work. So they're probably maybe not have even seen The Secret Right Volume 1. What's interesting is that when I went and looked up these two things that he mentioned here, the Imperium and the Imperium Manifesto, it says this is a controversial political work that is the follow-up to Norman Lowell's masterpiece, Imperium Europa. This book outlines a vibrant plan of action for the essential 21st century unification of all European descended people into a greater global regionalist empire. The book also discusses the many urgent issues facing all Westerners, including immigration, spiritual decadence, reverse racism, racial mixing, and much more. And so I went and looked up, so that there we have the Imperium Manifesto. Well, that fits it perfectly. Yeah, that's what I talked about yesterday. You know, this segregated country for white people. You know, that's what these people want, which is also based on the Imperium is based on a theocracy. Now, where have we talked about theocracy before? Do you understand who has openly called and believes in wanting a theocracy in the United States of America? People like, Chuck Baldwin, who ran for president that Ron Paul and Alex Jones supported. Chuck Baldwin is a theocrat. He openly believes that we should go back to a Ten Commandments rule of law in this country. And what's interesting about that is you had Ron Paul's connections with, what was his name, Bill White, who's a white supremacist KKK guy, and he had, you know, Ron Paul was having lunch with him on his campaign stops. So let's talk about what the Imperium means, and I want you to pay attention to, as I read to you what the Imperium is, I want you to pay attention to this and think about the things that I say in regards to the CMP information and the idea that what these guys want to bring about is a white ruled theocracy. And it's based, imagine that, on Roman principles. I want to thank the listener for bringing this to my attention. This is huge. He's 100% correct. This is their plan. And my research into the CMP and into these theocrats and the connections to those guys, to the Patriot Movement and Truth Movement, this is bombshell. This is huge. Man, oh man, oh man. It just, I love you guys. I love our listeners. My God, you guys are awesome. You continue to find the pieces of the things that I put out, and we are building ourselves a pretty damn good, solid, bulletproof case here. In ancient Rome, Imperium could be used as a term indicating a characteristic of people, the wealth held in items, or the measure of formal power they had. This qualification could be used in a rather loose context. For example, poets used it, not necessarily writing about state officials. However, in Roman society, it was also a more formal concept of legal authority. A man with Imperium Imperator had, in principle, absolute authority to apply the law within the scope of his magistracy or pro-magistracy, but could be vetoed or overruled by a magistrate or pro-magistrate having Imperium Maius, a higher degree of Imperium, or, as most Republican magistrates were, multiple, though not quite collegial, since each would act on his own, by the equal power of his colleague. Imperium can be distinguished from the regnum or royal power, which was inherited. Imperium was originally a military concept, a power of the imperior, general in the army, to command. The word derives from the Latin verb imperiare, to command. The title imperator was applied to the emperor, who was the commander of the armed forces. In fact, the Latin word imperator gives us the English word emperor. Imperium was indicated in two prominent ways. A curule magistrate or pro-magistrate carried an ivory baton surmounted by an eagle as his personal symbol of office. Any such magistrate was also escorted by lictors bearing the fasces, the traditional symbols of the imperium and authority. When outside the pomerium, axes were added to the fasces to indicate an imperial magistrate's power to enact capital punishment outside of Rome. So it goes on to talk about divine and earthly imperium. It says, in some monotheistic religions such as Christianity, the divine is held to have a superior imperium as the ultimate king of kings above all earthly powers. Whenever a society accepts this divine will to be expressed on earth as by a religious authority, that opens the way for a theocratic legitimation. Understand that? Whenever a society accepts the divine will to be expressed on earth by a religious authority, that opens the way for a theocratic legitimation. If, however, a secular ruler controls the religious hierarchy, he can use it to legitimate his own authority. Well, isn't that what they do? The absolute universal power was vested under early Islam in the original caliphate before it became the political toy of worldly powers beyond the throne. And it was even politically discarded by essentially secular princes and later again claimed by Mahdi's. When the Byzantine Eastern Roman emperors retained full Roman imperium and made the episcopate subservient, in the feudal West, a long rivalry would oppose the claims to supremacy within post-Roman Christianity between sacerdotatum, the priesthood, meaning the clergy ministering the word and will of God, in the person of the Pope, and the secular imperium of the revived Western Roman emperor since Charlemagne. Both would refer to the heritage of Roman law by their titular link with every city of Rome, the Pope, Bishop of Rome versus the Holy Roman Empire, even though his seat of power was north of the Alps. So this goes on and on and on. It talks about the, even in 19th century North America, when by the decree of the President of the United States, Brigham Young, the Mormon hierarch and head of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, was appointed first governor of the Utah Territory on the 28th of September, 1851. This was called, not politically, not in law, establishing a semi-theocratic, a theodemocratic form of government there until the Utah War, as in an imperium imperio within the limits of the Republic. So they set up the state of Utah as a theocracy, a semi-theocratic government in and of itself. And boy, that makes a lot of sense. Because I've speculated for a long time that Utah is really the capital of the United States. It's the religious capital of the United States. And it's funny when you see all how they're slowly bringing out all these Mormons in the Truth Movement and Patriot Movement. You got Joel Skousen and the CMP, and you've got Glenn Beck, and you've got, they're talking about Mitt Romney's going to be the Republican nominee for president in 2012. And Bill Cooper talked a bit about that, and he zeroed in on some of that stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of Mormonism connected to white supremacists and all the rest of that stuff as well, too. So, you know, that's an interesting piece of information there. Concerning the Imperium Manifesto there from our listener, and this idea of a white theocracy. You know that whole, you know the whole thing that you always heard? You know, I've heard it my whole life because I'm from the South. But you know that whole meme of, oh, the South's going to rise again? You know what I'm talking about, right? South's going to rise again. Where do you think that started from? I mean, I've seen it on bumper stickers. I've seen it on T-shirts. You know, I've heard people say it my whole life. South's going to rise again. Well, according to Abraham Lincoln, and we have this information in the Seabright Volume 2, the South has always and will always be owned and controlled by the Jesuits. So if the South is going to rise again, and we have Governor Rick Perry down here talking about, you know, secession from the union and the rest of this stuff. Doesn't it make sense to you that it's in the cards that these people want to essentially create a race war, create armed conflict with the militias and the Patriot movement and the Tea Party movement against the government, saying the criminal government and the Federal Reserve and all this are out of control. We need armed conflict to throw them over. And then Texas secedes from the union and these people get their white theocracy rule in one part of this country. I think this is playing out. I think it's coming. And I tell you what, I don't know where I'll be, and I don't want to be on the side of the federal government, but I tell you where I won't be. I won't be on the side of the South's going to rise again, riding with these Jesuits and these other fucking clowns. I'll leave the continent before I do some shit like that. You got me? My goodness. You guys are going to get exposed. All you fuckers. You know who I'm talking to. All of you out there. You white nationalist motherfuckers. There have been these crypto Nazis creeping around the Patriot movement. Your asses are going down. Hope you understand. Anyway. Let's see. Here's another email here. globalrealityshow@gmail.com. It's globalrealityshow@gmail.com. We're live here, 1:28 a.m. Central Standard Time. And we're going Moonbat right now. What do you think the third and fourth paradigm shifts could or would be from a normal human perspective, 9/11, eugenics, etc., being the first? Third and fourth paradigm shifts. Well, I think third and fourth paradigm shifts are going to come in the form of things that basically unprecedented proof that show that science and religion and mythology and all this stuff and is all the same thing. You know, that's what I think. They're going to show where religion's been correct and where religion's been wrong, where science has been correct and where science has been wrong, and then combine those things together. I think there are some paradigm shifts that are coming that they want to come and they want to occur. You understand? So they can assume more control and guide once again the perimeters of where that paradigm shift goes. But what is happening by those of us paying attention to this, and you don't have to know it all. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to be the smartest fucking guy on the block. You just need to be paying attention. That's it. That's all that requires it of you. And if enough of us start paying attention, we have the potential to be able to steer these paradigm shifts in the way that we see fit. And the way that people who inherently do not want evil to rule over them, to steer that way. You see, instead of it being steered into things like one world religion and the merging of science and religion and all this other stuff. So I think that's one. I think that's a big one. You know, dead solid proof of things like extraterrestrial existence and, you know, genetic tinkering of mankind, that kind of stuff. Time travel or interdimensional travel. I think those things would be paradigm shifters. I don't know. But again, what I do know is that if we just start paying attention and we get more people to pay attention, we have a chance, a small window of opportunity to be able to keep these people from steering these paradigm shifts the way they want them to, and away from the side and away from the betterment of humanity and more into the end of total control and tyranny and evil like they want. So the question was kind of vague. I don't know if I answered that question the way that you wanted me to answer it, sir, but I answered the way I saw it. So I hope that helps. But anyway, globalrealityshow@gmail.com. If you want to email me here tonight with any more things, we have some news to get into here tonight on the show. So since I don't see any more emails coming into the email box, I will go to some of the news here tonight for you. You think the Mexican mafia will be used to provocateur some shit? Yeah. It's definitely on the table. Let's see what we got here to talk about tonight. me go through the list. Parents who've claimed for years that their kids with ADHD are more creative are getting some scientific backup from a new study, which found that subjects with the disorder have enhanced creative abilities. Yeah. Uh-huh. We've known that for years. That's why they try to put all these kids on drugs to stifle their creativity, because they're afraid of these kids. That's why they've created this phony, you know, hyperactive disorder and ADD and all this shit. Because whenever they've targeted this specifically at what have been known as indigo children, crystal children. That's who they've targeted this at, because they are afraid that, and because they know there are people being born into this world now, probably many of us are some of these, that have the ability within inside of them to change everything on this planet. And this is what they're ultimately afraid of. A new study published Wednesday in the Journal of Personality and Individual Differences finds some truth in the increasingly popular theory that along with the thorns of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder comes a rose, increased creativity. Until now, the ADHD creativity link has been an oft-repeated rumor, seen by some as something exhausted parents cling to for consolation. But Dr. Holly White, then at the University of Memphis, and her colleague Priti Shah of the University of Michigan set out to find how much truth there was to the supposed link, and discovered that their subjects with ADHD showed marked differences both in their creative abilities and their approach to creative problem solving. Creativity is a slippery term, of course, often falling under the category of we know it when we see it. The definition is not good enough for proper science, however, and in recent years, standardized tests that measure creativity have focused on divergent and convergent thinking. Divergent thinking is the ability to generate spontaneous, often unexpected ideas or solutions, and test questions calculate originality, elaboration, and flexibility. Convergent thinking, on the other hand, is understood as divergent thinking's opposite, the kind of thought process that allows you to narrow down your options to one correct answer. This kind of thinking boosts your SAT score, but not necessarily your prospects for a career in poetry. In part because of ADHD's hallmark characteristics, including a lack of constraint, intellectually as well as behaviorally, studies have consistently found that people with ADHD often excel at divergent thinking but struggle with convergent thinking. These classifications, however, barely begin to capture what we mean when we talk about creativity. Divergent and convergent thinking and the standardized tests that measure them are all well suited to a laboratory setting, but how well they translate to the real world is another matter. White and her colleagues wanted to address exactly that in their new research. Does ADHD really have the holy grail of upsides? For their investigation, White and her team recruited 60 undergrads at the University of Memphis, exactly half of whom had an ADHD diagnosis. One of the tasks the subjects completed is called the Creative Achievement Questionnaire, originally developed by Shelley Carson at Harvard. In it, subjects are asked highly specific questions about their past achievements in 10 creative domains, including drama, humor, science, writing, and cooking, among others. An example of a question on the CAQ, whether the subject's work has won a prize or a juried art show, the specificity of the question is designed to limit the vulnerability of the responses to the subjective interpretations of people answering them. White and her team found that overall, with scores of all 10 domains combined, the subjects with ADHD had significantly higher scores than those without the diagnosis. Interestingly, White said that she also noticed a distinctive pattern, one not included in the study. ADHD subjects were more likely to excel at certain creative domains than at others. The performing arts in particular were their forte. While White did not find statistically significant differences here, she definitely noticed the trend. Her ADHD subjects were particularly masterful with the talent in question, and when the talent in question involved a lack of inhibition. So anything that, you know, would show a lack of inhibition would show that. That's amazing. And there's another page of this, but I mean, it's something we've known for years. And I think this is exactly why they've just tried to medicate these kids. And I've had brothers and sisters. Thank God I was, you know, a little older and I was skipped a generation. I was probably one of the last generations where they started putting people on that stuff. And so I didn't, but I had a brother and sister had to be put on it. And you know, yeah, same thing. You know, they always do it to very creative people. That's what they're looking for. But it's just everybody's known this for years. And, you know, it's coming out now, but hopefully people will start, you know, taking it seriously. And maybe people will stop allowing their kids to be put on this stuff. And maybe we can have a revolution on this planet at some point. My goodness. A revolution of the mind, not a revolution of this dumbass. Oh, we'll shoot you, my 20 gauge pea shooter. Bam, I hit you with a fucking energy weapon, bitch. Goodness gracious. Anyway. All righty. What else do we have here tonight? Isn't this interesting? Potential oil reserves are often treated as a state secret. This is especially true in Saudi Arabia, the world's largest oil producer, but soon the cheap energy bonanza could be on the downturn, according to U.S. State Department documents released by British newspaper The Guardian. The documents, dated between 2007 and 2009, point to a phenomenon known to many as peak oil, or the point of production where you cannot continue to produce any more oil, leading to a decline in availability and a spike in prices. But far from being a mad prophet of doom, the U.S. cable source is not someone who is credibly, whose credibility is easily questioned. His name is Dr. Saddam Al-Husseini, the former head geologist in charge of exploration for the Saudi oil firm Aramco. He retired in 2004, but stayed in touch with U.S. officials. According to Al-Husseini, Saudi Arabian reserves may be smaller than thought, and even though the Saudis are on a growth cycle aimed at pumping out over 12 million barrels a day over the next several years, but Al-Husseini warned that global output would likely peak before then and potentially start in 2012. Isn't that convenient? So now peak oil, which we already know is a scam, we already know is a fraud, is going to start happening in 2012. Oh my goodness gracious. Peak oil returns in 2012 for return engagement. One millennia only. I mean, my God. This shit's getting too obvious. You know, everything now. 2012, the return. Peak oil returns in 2012, the return engagement. What the fuck was that? How did that happen? My player started playing on my computer and started playing back what I just said through my speakers. That was weird. That was not an effect. I did not mean to do that. I don't know how that happened. Oh, this is a great one because I've noticed people doing this, and I want to bitch slap every single one of them. OMG, when did we start talking like TXT messages? Susan Mouser's 16-year-old daughter often calls out over her shoulder as she leaves the house. Sure, actual words would be better, but mom knows not to complain. A mother of teenagers is pathetically grateful for an I love you no matter what form it takes. Then there are the various forms of LOL that our teens use in regular parlance. It becomes a conjugable verb by now. And of course, then there's the saltier acronym used by son Bill, WTF mom. But before you judge, note that former VP candidate Sarah Palin just used that one in a TV interview, and CNN Anderson Cooper used it on his show. Okay. So it's justified because Sarah Palin said WTF or LOL on an interview, and Anderson Cooper did it too. So it's justified because those two clowns did it. My God, can you believe this shit? This is the literal dumbing down of society, folks. I heard somebody say, oh, WTF, man, WTF. I'm like, if you don't say what the fuck to me, and you continue to say WTF, I'm going to bitch slap you with a George Carlin CD. You got me? My God. I wish George Carlin would have lived long enough to see this. He'd be all over this shit. Oh, LOL, man. What the fuck? I just lolled at that. Shit. I'm LMAFO over here, dude. WTF. OMG. It's just fucking retarded. I mean, if you need any more proof that of this social engineering, this, you know, dumbing down, I'm sorry. I don't know what to do for you. And the Butcher of Waco, Reno, Part 2, The Return, Napolitano, that's what I call her. I mean, didn't they just repackage fucking the Butcher of Waco, Janet Reno, and put her in a new fucking cryo body or something and roll her out as Napolitano? I mean, swear, seriously. That's a man, baby. Elena Kagan, that's a man, too. Lady Gaga, that's a man. The United States is facing a heightened threat of attacks from extremists, possibly the highest since the attacks of September 11, 2001. Oh, my God. There is no question that we have made many important strides in securing our country from terrorism since 9/11, but the threat continues to evolve. And in some ways, the threat today may be at its most heightened state since the attacks nearly 10 years ago. Napolitano, appearing before the House Homeland Security Committee, said that al-Qaeda still represents a threat to the United States despite its diminished capabilities, and that the nation also faces threats from a number of al-Qaeda associates that share its violent extremist ideology. Fear sauce, fear sauce. Hungry? Have some fear sauce. Plenty of it to go around. Plenty of it. We're just drowning in fear sauce. Find that stuff anywhere you go. My God. Disgusting. You know, and here it is. It's back in the news again. We talked about the volcano geyser at Yellowstone National Park. And it seems that, you know, we've had a big amount of people that have been, oh, no, no, nothing's going to happen at Yellowstone. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. And then we had other stories coming out saying, yeah, you know, we need to be worrying about this. I think there's something to this. I think they're trying to downplay the seriousness of Yellowstone. And it's funny that they had put that into Roland Emmerich's 2012 movie, isn't it? The huge volcano under Yellowstone National Park has been rising at an unprecedented rate during the past several years, according to a new study. In the ancient past, the Yellowstone volcano produced some of the biggest known continental eruptions, but the recent rising doesn't seem another doomsday. Does not mean that another doomsday eruption is looming, scientists say. Yeah, well, again, if they're telling you to be in fear of something, then don't be in fear of it. But if they're telling you, hey, don't worry about it, don't be in fear of this, it's not dangerous, because they always come back and say, we had no idea, we couldn't calculate that this was going to happen, oh my God, there was no way for us to tell, ma, ma, ma. You see, I don't trust this shit for a minute. I think there is something going on there, and they're doing their damnedest to run a PR campaign right now to get people convinced that it's not. That's what the real importance of that story is. And again, this is about the third story they've ran on this in the past several weeks. So, like I said, you know, it's just hard for me to trust anything when these people are going out of their way running a PR campaign to get you convinced that, everything's all good. Don't worry about any cataclysms. I'm not worried about any cataclysms. I'm worried about things that they're going to do using force multiplication technology to cause these cataclysms to happen, or happen quicker than maybe they would have, speeding up the time it takes for these events to happen. So they can eliminate more people, so they can wipe out more of the population, and of course, they get plausible deniability because they just say, hey, it's an act of God. Your average person doesn't know they have scalar weapons and that all this stuff has been around for years and years and years. And that these scalar weapons they use to shoot things out of the sky or cause earthquakes to happen or cause hurricanes to whip around whole continents and come back down and slam into other places or whatever else have you that they do with this technology. But that's, you know, that's what the new weaponization of everything is. Full plausible deniability. These people can shift around continents. They can shift around power, population centers, depopulation. They can do it all and alleviate themselves from all blame and all guilt and simply blame it on Mother Nature. They have that kind of power now, and these are the big events that you're going to continue to see come. And, you know, then what happens when FEMA doesn't show up when they're supposed to? I mean, you seeing these patterns here? They cause these things to happen so they can alleviate any guilt for their involvement. And then what happens? Well, Halliburton and Brown and Root and whoever else gets the contracts, no bid, to come in and do the rebuilding on wherever one of these events takes place. You see, talked about it many times. It's what I have deemed the disaster economy. Thinking about writing a book about the disaster economy at some point. That's really what I see as the future and how the the disaster economy ties into the technological evolvement as well. Definitely plays into that. Anyway, we're going to leave it there tonight. I want to thank everybody for tuning in and being with us here for the show tonight. Folks, please support us and donate to the cause. The chip-in banner is there. Everything we get in goes right back into this. And it doesn't cost us a lot to run this operation every month. But we got bills we got to pay, and we got films we got to get out. And I've got to survive. So please donate. If you haven't donated recently, please do so. We could use the help right now. My name is Josh Reeves. I love each and every one of you. We'll see you next time. You guys have a great night. Take care.